Hi, Dave Emery here. Side 2 For the Record, program number 759, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 6, subtitled More on the Deep, Fifth Column. We're recording on October 20th of the year 2013. Now, we're going to return from the past of the World War II era to the present, and we're going to take a look at what I call the Deep Fifth Column, and we're going to begin by reviewing a bit of material that we ended the program with last week. This is a post called Anarcho-Fascism, the Libertarian Endgame. This was blogged by someone who posts under the name of Down East Dem. It's from the Daily Kos website, posted on June 15th of the year 2010. By the way, very quickly, as with people who are attracted to WikiLeaks or the pirate, inextricably linked Pirate Bay or the Pirate Party, or many of the people that support Eddie Snowden, although he is a fascist and the forces around him are fascist, many of the people and interests attracted to libertarianism are so attracted because they are idealists. And I don't want to be misunderstood as casting aspersions on them as individuals. However, the end game here is truly apocalyptic and very accurately, I think, summarized by Down East Dem as anarcho-fascism. Now, this is a discussion of the philosophy of Hans Hermann Hoppe, the German-born student of Jürgen Habermas, about whom we spoke last week. Habermas, another of Habermas' students, is Alex Karp, the CEO of Palantir, whose largest investor and chairman of the board is Peter Thiel, who's also the primary capital backer of Ron Paul's campaign. Karp is also the CEO of a company called Robotics, which manufactures security robots. That, too, has as its primary investor Peter Thiel. Now, Hans Hermann Hoppe is the author of a book called Democracy, the God That Failed, which is an open indictment of democracy, and Hans Hermann Hoppe is he endorses absolute monarchy. He also is very close to the Ludwig von Mises Institute, which is the source of the economic theories of Ron Paul and Edward Snowden. As we saw last week, Hermann Hoppe is openly opposed to democracy, and his view of it as a mob beast or mob rule is precisely in keeping with the explicitly anti-democratic views of the Ludwig von Mises Institute and Peter Thiel and Adolf Hitler in his industry speech of the industry club of Dusseldorf that we spoke about last week. Very quickly, skipping down and recapping. Democracy, Professor Hoppe tells his readers and presumably his students at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, is nothing more than mob rule and has resulted in a serious decline in civilization. The mass of people, as Laboetti and Mises recognized, always and everywhere consists of brutes, dullards, and fools, easily deluded and sunk into habitual submission. Thus, today, inundated from early childhood with government propaganda in public schools and educational institutions by legions of publicly certified intellectuals, most people mindlessly accept and repeat nonsense, such as that democracy is self-rule and government is of, by, and for the people. That's an excerpt from Democracy, the God That Failed. And then Down East Dem comments, even worse than the statist capitalism of the United States is European social democracy and its myriad social programs. Universal health care, for example, is especially evil, according to Professor Hoppe. Now, place this in the context of what we have just seen in Washington and what we are continuing to see with this vehement, virile, ferocious opposition to the Affordable Health Care Act, which would give millions of people who cannot afford health care, access to health care. All of the many flaws of the Affordable Care Act notwithstanding, and it got corporatized to a considerable extent in its formation. But again, note the complete negation of democratic process by the Republican Party. The Affordable Care Act was a bill that was passed by both houses of Congress, signed into law by the President of the United States, upheld by the Supreme Court, and yet the Republican Party and the Tea Party faction in particular, at the epicenter of which are the Paulistivian libertarian types, of which Edward Snowden is a devotee and with which he is aligned. They are using political blackmail and not only damaging the U.S. economy with the government shutdown, but threatening U.S. and international economic apocalypse rather than permit health care for millions of people. And note what Hans Hermann Hoppe says about health care. As a result of subsidizing the malingerers, the neurotics, the careless, the alcoholics, the drug addicts, the AIDS-infected, and the physically and mentally challenged through insurance regulation and compulsory health insurance, there will be more illness, malingering, neuroticism, carelessness, alcoholism, drug addiction, AIDS infection, and physical and mental retardation. That's from Democracy, the God That Failed. Democrats, and then Downey's Dem goes on to comment, Democrats in this radical libertarian philosophy are no better than communists, since Democrats rely on statist solutions that are antithetical to the, quote, natural order, unquote, and the cult of private property. There he is completely, Hans Hermann Hoppe, completely recapitulating the philosophy expressed by Hitler in his speech to the Industry Club of Dusseldorf. Another aspect here of Hans Hermann Hoppe's philosophy. Hoppe writes, had the United States not entered World War I, the European monarchies would have been preserved. As mentioned earlier, Hoppe is an anarcho-fascist, where the ideal system would be a confederation of small, privately owned units controlled by natural elites, unquote, i.e. Heron mentioned. That is precisely the philosophy that is embodied by people like Peter Thiel in their seasteading movement, in which they hope to get small ocean-dwelling ships or islands as little libertarian principalities to permit the wealthy to escape the burden of taxes and even belonging to a state. With Hans Hermann Hoppe, again, part of the orbit of the Ludwig von Mises Institute, and a student like Alex Karp of Jürgen Habermas, we are seeing the precise philosophy endorsed by individuals like Peter Thiel. Now, again, the forces that are wreaking havoc in Washington, fascists acting under the banner of libertarianism, really debasing and bastardizing language in a remarkable fashion. These are people whose views are so extreme that they explicitly reject democracy. They support the Confederacy. They support the re-secession of the South. They supported African-American slavery in the 19th century. And in the views of Ron Paul Abe and Ludwig von Mises, resident scholar Walter Block, who has a theory he calls, or a doctrine he calls, voluntary slavery, they are explicitly rejecting human liberty and human dignity, and doing so under the banner of liberty or libertarianism. It is, to me, grotesque at one level and absolutely infuriating, in case that hasn't become quite clear. What a bastardization and debasement of language and conceptualization. As I said last week, the Ron Paul / Walter Block / Ludwig von Mises concept of voluntary slavery, the ultimate oxymoron, and the ultimate collateralized debt obligation. Now, one of the white supremacist organizations with which Ron Paul has networked for a long time is an organization called American Renaissance. In the American Renaissance publication of October 11th, 2013, they had a post on their website that this will be excerpted and linked in the description for the program. They had a post called Libertarians and Race Realism. This authored by Gilbert Kavanaugh. It reads in part, "Who are our potential allies? For those of us who enjoy a touch of libertarianism, the news of Jared Taylor's recent appearance at Hans Hermann Hoppe's Property and Freedom Society was well received." Jared Taylor, by the way, is the leader and founder of American Renaissance, and he was a recent honored guest at a convention or meeting of the Freedom and Property Society of the aforementioned Hans Hermann Hoppe. Now, of American Renaissance, reading very briefly, this from the History Commons website, a profile of American Renaissance from September of 1995, a former Washington Times columnist, that, by the way, was, of course, is basically an offshoot of the Unification Church of Sun Myung-moon. One of their columnists named Sam Francis was fired for giving an address at American Renaissance, excerpting here, "Sam Francis, a senior columnist and writer for the conservative Washington Times, is fired after suggesting that white Americans must reassert what he believes is their innate dominance over other races. At the 1995 American Renaissance Conference, hosted by the white supremacist organization of the same name, Francis tells his audience, quote, whites must reassert our identity and our solidarity, and we must do so in explicitly racial terms through the articulation of a racial consciousness as whites." And again, that is American Renaissance, viewed with favor, obviously, by Hans Hermann Hoppe, whose views on health insurance, I think, we can see being manifested in a dramatic and horrifying way by the Republican Party and their opposition to the Affordable Care Act. The New Republic had some commentary on American Renaissance and their association with the Palestinian Libertarian Organization in, for the record, 756, about the Palestinian Libertarian Organization. We noted American Nazi Bill White's observation that Ron Paul had been regularly meeting with members of American Renaissance. An article about Ron Paul by the New Republic staff from January 14th of 2008. In an article entitled "The Coming Race War," the Ron Paul Political Report refers to the, quote, pro-communist philanderer Martin Luther King, unquote, and refers to his nonviolent approach, unquote, as state violence, unquote. The newsletter advises that if there is any issue that the Republicans have in their favor for the next presidential election, it is the question of race. It was all over from Michael Dukakis when Jesse Jackson gave his awful primetime speech at the last Democratic convention and the cameras focused on masses of teary-eyed left-wing blacks. A May 1990 issue of Ron Paul Political Report cites Jared Taylor, who 6 months later would go on to found the eugenicist and white supremacist periodical American Renaissance. The May 1991 issue of the Ron Paul Political Report cites American Renaissance and offers reader subscription information for it. The July 1994 Ron Paul Survival Report cites, quote, criminologist Jared Taylor. Jared Taylor, the founder of the American Renaissance organization, again, obviously viewed quite favorably by Hans Hermann Hoppe. And again, that is one of many of the Nazi and white supremacist organizations with which Ron Paul has not only networked for decades, but with which he has joined the hip. Talking about Ron Paul networking with white supremacists is sort of like talking about Adolf Hitler networking with Nazis. I mean, the relationship is that profound. And again, I want to note that Ron Paul is a very crafty politician. The press has not done its job of really talking about what he is about. He is a master seducer and has won many people who are anything but fascists over to his point of view by using political seduction. He tells the potheads he favors legalizing pot. He tells people who are opposed to some of America's utterly ridiculous, well, misguided military interventions abroad, that he favors curtailing those interventions, and so has been very, he tells people who don't like high taxes he's opposed to taxes, but they don't realize what he's really all about. He favors, the forces with which he is aligned favor breaking up the United States. Just this past week, we saw Sarah Palin and a group of Tea Party types at the White House gates. One guy called for Barack Obama to come out with his hands up. Put down the Quran and come out with your hands up. Sarah Palin was right there screaming along with him. Sarah Palin was the vice presidential candidate, of course, in 2008. Yes, and we saw in, for the record, 652, that she is basically a political cat's paw for the Alaska Independence Party, which not only, again, favors the breakup of the United States, but which is a correspondent party of the Aryan Nations. More of some of the links between the forces that have been so dramatic in the last few weeks in Washington. They're part and parcel of the Republican Party and the forces, the elements around Eddie the Friendly Spook. One of the Tea Party Republicans is a Michigan Republican representative named Justin Amash, A-M-A-S-H. Interestingly, he is of Palestinian descent. I wonder to what extent some of his progenitors might have been part of the milieu of the Grand Mufti, the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement and a general in the Waffen SS. Justin Amash, by the way, introduced legislation, anti-NSA legislation, on the floor of Congress. He also is one of the Republicans responsible for the government shutdown. This from Charles Johnson's Little Green Football's website from mid-October of 2013, this past week. The Republicans who caused the government shutdown. The Atlantic has a helpful rundown of 32 Republicans who caused the government shutdown. First on the list, Representative Justin Amash, home district, Grand Rapids, Michigan, quoted, President Obama and Senator Reid refused to negotiate over giving regular Americans the same breaks they give themselves, government workers, and big business, unquote. And, lest we forget, Representative Justin Amash was endorsed by none other than pseudo-liberal activist Glenn Greenwald, who called Amash, quote, a GOP dissident. Right, that is the editorial comment by Charles Johnson. Then Glenn Greenwald on, I believe this is his Facebook account, might be Twitter. That's actually Twitter. GOP establishment launches primary challenge against GOP dissident and NSA critic. This at justinamash.com, politico.com story. This is Glenn Greenwald talking about a challenge, a primary challenge to Justin Amash. Then Charles Johnson goes on to comment, in fact, Amash and Greenwald had quite a mutual admiration society going on. Justin Amash tweeted, a must-read piece by Glenn Greenwald. Whichever party controls the political process, we will see erosion of civil liberties and hypocrisy. Glenn Greenwald, very, very close to WikiLeaks, which is inextricably linked with The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. Julian Assange, a big Ron Paul and Rand Paul admirer. Sarah Harrison of WikiLeaks has accompanied Snowden from Hong Kong all the way to Moscow, and as we saw this past, as was revealed, I should say, this past week, has been with Snowden all along in Moscow. One cannot separate Glenn Greenwald from WikiLeaks. One cannot separate WikiLeaks from The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. And as we saw in For the Record 754, Glenn Greenwald is essentially a fellow traveler of some of the most murderous neo-Nazi organizations, having represented them for years, much of that pro bono, and basically having run legal interference for the strategy of leaderless resistance. It's also interesting, too, Glenn Greenwald will have us believe he is very concerned with people's privacy and civil liberties when one of his clients, Nazi foot soldiers, in the case of one of two cases where he represented Matthew Hale of the World Church of the Creator, Paul Craig Cobb posted the personal information, address, and photographs of the relatives of Judge Joan Lefkoe. Then shortly afterward, Judge Lefkoe came home from work and found her husband and her mother shot to death in her home. Paul Craig Cobb, one of Hale's foot soldiers, thought that was quite neat. Glenn Greenwald didn't seem very concerned about the civil liberties and internet privacy of Judge Lefkoe or her family. Again, as I noted in For the Record 754, no one who has done what Glenn Greenwald has done could possibly be what Glenn Greenwald claims to be or pretends to be. And again, the quote from Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler's political manifesto and autobiography: most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Never lose sight of that passage from Mein Kampf, people. It is absolutely central to what we are talking about here. Now, I want to note that the same people who did terrible damage to the U.S. economy, the budget, the government shutdown, I should say, is going to end up costing the United States billions of dollars. The same people who threatened economic chaos to not only the United States, but to the global economy, this because they absolutely felt it was essential to deny health insurance to millions of Americans, recall Hans Hermann Hoppe's views in this regard. Those are the same elements that are part and parcel to Eddie the Friendly Spook, who, like Glenn Greenwald, is the opposite of what he pretends to be. He says he is a defender of human rights. In fact, he described himself as a fighter for human rights. Well, maybe that's why he feels it's essential to get rid of Social Security and to bring back the gold standard. The latter, of course, would devastate the global economy. Some observations about what the Republicans and the milieu of Eddie the Friendly Spook were threatening to do. The Wall Street Journal op-ed page of Friday, October 11th, 2013, carried an op-ed piece by Alan S. Blinder, who was a former vice chairman of the Federal Reserve. It's called "The GOP's Flirtation with Disaster," excerpting briefly. Most of the negative impact of what the Republicans threatened to do by failing to raise the debt ceiling, most of the negative impact on GDP would cease once the impasse ended, though strong downward momentum is hard to arrest. Other costs, however, would last for years, if not decades. Once international investors come to see threats to default as a standard weapon of American political combat, something they may now be starting to believe, U.S. Treasury debt would cease to be the world's safest asset, and then goes on to talk about the implications of that. What I think we are seeing, people, is the beginning of World War III and the assault on the U.S. If you're going to break up the U.S. like the neo-Confederates want to do, one of the things you're going to have to do is to destroy the economy and things like Social Security, government pensions, the VA. That's one of the things they're aiming at. If you're going to destroy the United States, you're going to have to destroy the dollar's status as the reserve currency of choice. That will take decades to do, but there is already a move in that regard. I will have links to many of these stories. I can only touch on them very briefly due to the limitations of time. From the New York Times of Wednesday, October 16th, 2013, by Eduardo Porter on the economic scene, Tremors and Trepidation, Imagining the Dollar Without Its Privilege, talking about just how devastating it would be if the Republicans didn't raise the debt limit and the effects this would have on the dollar status as a reserve currency. Right next to that, an article by Peter Edis, E-A-D-I-S, Stalemate Puts a Strain on a Vital Debt Market, talking about the effects on short and long-term debt of the shutdown of the government and the budget stalemate. I think that it is not a stretch at all to see what the Republicans are trying to do with their imposition of austerity, a completely discredited economic doctrine, with what Germany is doing with great effect and devastating effect in Europe. We are going to see this when we move on from The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. Again, I had the reason I haven't produced programs, I had a serious illness, was off the air for about 2 years. However, I was blogging away. If you want to get a head start on that, take a look at the news and supplemental section of the SpitfireList.com website. There's tons of info there. We are going to talk about that. What I am going to do is to suggest that the effects of the Palestinian Libertarian Organization and the interests which had behaved so devastatingly and so stridently in Washington in recent weeks and months, they are precisely the political interests that are embodied in Eddie the Friendly Spook and of which he is a part, and that is the Deep Fifth Column. Now, imagine the effects on international opinion of Eddie the Friendly Spook's, quote, disclosures, unquote, about the NSA, and weigh those against the effects of his milieu and what they have been doing in Washington in recent weeks. From that same issue of the New York Times Wednesday, October 16th of 2013, an article by Damien Cave, C-A-V-E, from Mexico City, Viewing the U.S. in Fear and Display. Skipping down. Faced with Washington's march toward the default, the world has reacted mostly with disbelief that the reigning superpower could fall into such dysfunction, worry over global suffering to come, and frustration that American lawmakers could let the problem reach this point. Fear and dismay. Viewing the U.S. in fear and dismay, that is one of the things that has resulted from Eddie Snowden's disclosures about NSA, leaving aside the wisdom of those policies. Every other intelligence service does this. More about that in weeks to come. However, we are all out of time. So be sure to tune in next week, boys and girls, for another exciting adventure of the Adventures, another exciting episode of the Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 759, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 6, more about the Deep Fifth Column, being recorded on October 20th, 2013. My name's Dave Emery. Ciao.